The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, it is. As I try to hit the correct button to get things rolling on this Thursday, Insurrection Day. I get, what do we call January 6th here on out? The day the losers tried to overturn a fair and free election? That's a bit lugubrious, isn't it? A bit wordy. I don't know. We need to come up with something. Manickler thought this was the Nicole Scherzinger show. You're in the wrong place, Manickler. Okay. Anyway, welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, not Scherzinger or however she says her name. And today is the anniversary of the attempted overturning of a fair and free election here in the United States. And I got to say, the day began officially, I guess, when Joe Biden, well, first Kamala Harris spoke, and then Joe Biden delivered probably the best speech of his lifetime from Statuary Hall in the Capitol, where we all saw those, I say people, because I don't have another term to use for them, those dregs of the earth who broke their way into the Capitol 1 year ago today and vandalized and just, you know, the thing that gets me so much is if the roles were somehow reversed, and they wouldn't be, because a group of Democrats, sorry, would not break windows and doors down to smash their way into the Capitol to go hunting for the vice president to hang him or her and scope out Nancy Pelosi. Oh, Nancy! No, see, Democrats wouldn't do that. Not that I have the highest opinion of Democrats as a particular group, but today's not the day for Democrat bashing. Today is the day for insurrectionist truth-telling. And truth-telling is something we don't get from that side of the aisle. One thing that Donald Trump has brought to this country is, a lot of shit, that's for sure. But the acceptability of bold-faced lies. He made it okay for these other politicians, who are always kind of questionable characters anyway. You know, the label of politician is kind of afraid, sad. Anyway, it's just not a good look. It's not a good anything. There's nothing good about it, right? These people, these Trump wannabes, take the worst of the characteristics that he spews, and they embrace them and embody them. Well, today's the day I want to talk a bit about really what's wrong with these people. I'm not going to rehash the attacks on the Capitol. I'm not going to rehash the horrifying video, because you've seen all that. You'll see it again tonight on the television, much, much better than I could do it here. But what has been getting me in this journey, what has been really weighing on me, really, since Trump got into office, is the way these people emulate him. And the biggest characteristic that they seem to be trying to copy is the lying. You know, I've talked about our governor here in Florida, Ron DeSantis, or as, you know, many of us call him, moron death sentence. He today... Did you hear what he did today? This is death sentence today.
Today is going to be, I mean, honestly, I'm not going to watch any of it, but you're going to see the D.C. New York media. I mean, this is their Christmas, January 6th, okay?
What?
They are going to take this and milk this for anything they could to try to be able to smear anyone.
Oh, you know what? And I need to show you the video of this only because his moronic choice for Surgeon General, which that alone is pretty reprehensible, is standing right behind him smirking. So let me bring up this video while this is playing, because I had only heard DeSantis's shameful words. I hadn't seen this. This fake phony doctor behind him smirking, but I'm going to show you the video for those of you watching one of the video feeds. Look at the guy over DeSantis's right shoulder. Tall, good-looking black man is the alleged doctor, the man that moron death sentence chose to be his
today
surgeon general.
I'm not going to watch any of it, but you're going to see the D.C. New York media. I mean, this is their Christmas, January 6th, okay? They are going to take this and milk this for anything they could to try to be able to smear anyone whoever supported Donald Trump.
We don't need this to smear anyone who ever supported Donald Trump. Those actions stand on their own, and this smirking moron behind the moron is just horrible. And yes, I know Kazakhstan is blowing up, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. It's so upsetting to me, having spent more than a month there and enjoying it. You know, the people that. But again, today's not the day for that, because I have other things that I need to share with you today. Most notably, the tact I was going to take, and I still will. I just saw a tweet from Mehdi Hasan from MSNBC, who put together a bit of a compilation video, and it's exactly where I'm going with today's show, which is to point out not only the hypocrisy, but the mendacity, the lack of character, the lack of integrity, the lack of not only a backbone or a spine, but anything that is honorable about these people. So Mehdi Hasan, his show, put together a compilation of some of these characters, and I call them characters for good reason, because it's a better word than humans or politicians or anything else you might use to describe them, because, again, they're the dregs of the earth. So hold on, I need to bring this out so I can show you the whole screen, because it is a split screen thing that they came up with. And if you're listening to one of the audio streams, that's okay. You'll get the gist of what's going on. Just know that these are, it starts with Mike Pence, and it goes through a litany of these Republicans. Then what they were saying on or around January 6th, and what they're saying now. Get the premise? Okay, so let's go to the videotape, shall we? And again, it starts with the former Vice President Mike Pence.
Today was a dark day in the history of the United States Capitol. But thanks to the swift efforts of U.S. Capitol Police, federal, state, and local law enforcement, the violence was quelled. The Capitol is secured, and the people's work continues.
That was then.
I know the
media
wants to distract from the Biden administration's failed agenda by focusing on one day in January. They want to use that one day to try and demean the character and intentions of 74 million Americans.
The mob was fed
McConnell.
Lies.
Then
they were provoked by the president and other powerful people. After careful consideration, I've made the decision to oppose the House Democrats' slanted and unbalanced proposal.
Wow.
For another commission to study the events
of
January the 6th.
Right.
The
president bears responsibility for
Kevin
Wednesday's
McCarthy.
Attack on Congress.
This
by
was
mob
then.
Rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob
you think?
When he saw what was unfolding.
You think?
I was the first person to contact him when the riots was going on. He didn't see it. What he ended the call was saying, telling me he'll put something out to make sure to stop this. And that's what he did. He put a video
Bullshit.
Out later.
Bullshit.
All I can
Bullshit.
Say
oh,
is,
this is the best
count
one.
Me out. Enough is enough.
Count
can
me out.
Can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no.
Yesterday,
oh my
in particular,
God.
The president's language
Rafael
and
Cruz
crossed a line, and it was reckless. I disagree with it.
And they look at Donald J. Trump, and they look
What?
At the millions and millions of people inspired who went to battle fighting alongside President Trump, and they're terrified.
What?
And they want him to go away. Let me tell you this right now. Donald J. Trump ain't going anywhere.
Okay. Lovely. So that's the short version. That's the compilation that that Mehdi Hasan's staff put together, showing the hypocrisy, the just blatant hypocrisy, and yes, projection from these shameful Republicans. And I say, actually, it should be shameless because they know no shame. So it is Thursday, so Howie Klein's going to be here. So I don't have time to play the entirety of Joe Biden's speech, although I thought about it because, frankly, it was the best speech that I think he's ever delivered. I think this was the speech of his lifetime. But what I did was then I found a transcript of it. And here's the other thing. You know, Joe Biden is not the best public speaker, nor was his predecessor. Neither one of them were very good speech makers. That's the one thing that Obama excelled at. So let me share with you a little bit of what Joe Biden said, but instead of his, you know, marbled delivery, I'll read to you some of it. He writes, "To state the obvious, 1 year ago today in this sacred place, democracy was attacked, simply attacked. The will of the people was under assault. The Constitution, our Constitution, faced the gravest of threats. Outnumbered in the face of a brutal attack, Capitol Police, the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, the National Guard, and other brave law enforcement officials saved the rule of law. Our democracy held. We the people endured. We the people prevailed. For the first time in our history, a president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed. And on this day of remembrance, we must make sure that such an attack never, never happens again. I'm speaking to you today from Statuary Hall in the United States Capitol. This is where the House of Representatives met for 50 years in the decades leading up to the Civil War." And then he goes into a bit of history about the room they're in. Then he says, then he goes back to January 6th, 2021 and says, "Close your eyes. Go back to that day. What do you see? Rioters rampaging, waving for the first time inside this Capitol the Confederate flag that symbolizes the cause to destroy America, to rip us apart. Even during the Civil War, that never, ever happened, but it happened here in 2021. What else do you see? The mob breaking windows, kicking in doors, breaching the Capitol, American flags on poles being used as weapons, as spears. Fire extinguishers being thrown at the heads of police officers. A crowd that professes their love for law enforcement assaulted those police officers, dragged them, sprayed them, stomped on them. Over 140 police officers were injured. We all heard the police officers who were there that day testify to what happened. One officer called it, quote, a medieval battle, and said that he was more afraid that day than he was fighting the war in Iraq. They've repeatedly asked since that day, quote, how dare anyone diminish, belittle, or deny the hell they were put through? We saw with our own eyes. Rioters menaced these halls, threatening life of the Speaker of the House, literally erecting gallows to hang the Vice President of the United States of America. But what did we not see? We didn't see a former president who had just rallied the mob to attack sitting in the private dining room of the Oval Office in the White House, watching it all on television and doing nothing for hours as police were assaulted, lives at risk, the nation's capital under siege. This was not a group of tourists. This was an armed insurrection. They weren't looking to uphold the will of the people. They were looking to deny the will of the people. They weren't looking to uphold a free and fair election. They were looking to overturn one. They weren't looking to save the cause of America. They were looking to subvert the Constitution. This isn't about being bogged down in the past. It's about making sure the past isn't buried. That's the only way forward. That's what great nations do. They don't bury the truth. They face up to it. Sounds like hyperbole, but that's your truth. They face up to it. And then he goes on. Again, if you're just joining us, I'm reading to you pieces of Joe Biden's speech from this morning because it was so good. It was so good. He continues. He says, we're a great nation. My fellow Americans, in life there's truth, and tragically there are lies, lies conceived and spread for profit and power. We must be absolutely clear about what is true and what is a lie. And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest as more important than his country's interest, than America's interest, and because his bruised ego matters more to him than our democracy or our Constitution. He can't accept he lost, even though that's what 93 U.S. senators, his own attorney general, his own vice president, governors, and state officials in every battleground state have all said. He lost! That's what 81 million of you did as you voted for a new way forward. He's done what no president in American history, in the history of this country, has ever, ever done. He refused to accept the results of an election and the will of the American people. While some courageous men and women in the Republican Party are standing against it, trying to uphold the principle of that party, too many others are transforming that party into something else. They seem no longer to want to be the party of Lincoln, Eisenhower, Reagan, the Bushes. Well, whatever my other disagreements are with Republicans who support the rule of law and not the rule of a single man, I will always seek to work together with them to find shared solutions wherever possible. Because when we have a shared belief in democracy, then anything is possible, anything. So at this moment, Joe Biden asked, we must decide, what kind of nation are we going to be? Are we going to be the nation that accepts political violence as a norm? Are we going to be a nation where we allow partisan election officials to overturn the legally expressed will of the people? Are we going to be a nation that lives not by the light of the truth, but in the shadow of lies? We cannot allow ourselves to be that kind of nation. The way forward is to recognize the truth, to live by it. The big lie being told by the former president and many Republicans who fear his wrath is that the insurrection in this country actually took place on Election Day, November 3rd, 2020. Think about that. Is that what you thought? Is that what you thought when you voted that day? Taking part in an insurrection? Is that what you thought you were doing? Or did you think you were carrying out your highest duty as a citizen and voting? I'm going to post the entire text of this speech on the blog today where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/1-6-22. Because it goes on, and I don't have time to read the whole thing because I have other things I want to share with you. But I'll read a couple more passages. He says, he's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president, defeated by a margin of over 7 million of your votes in a full and free and fair election. There is simply zero proof the election results are inaccurate. In fact, in every venue where evidence had to be produced, an oath to tell the truth had to be taken, the former president failed to make his case. Just think about this. The former president and his supporters have never been able to explain how they accept as accurate other election results that took place on November 3rd, elections for governor, United States Senate, House of Representatives, elections in which they closed the gap in the House. They challenged none of that. The president's name was first. Then we went down the line. Governor, senators, House of Representatives. Somehow those results are accurate on the same ballot. But the presidential race was flawed. And on the same ballot, same day, cast by the same voters, the only difference, the former president didn't lose those races. He just lost the one that was his own. I'll just jump to the end. Again, there's pages more that I don't have time to get to. But he finishes up by talking about the fight at the Capitol. He said, I didn't seek this fight brought to this Capitol 1 year ago today, but I will not shrink from it either. I will stand in this breach. I will defend this nation, and I'll allow no one to place a dagger at the throat of democracy. We will make sure the will of the people is heard, that the ballot prevails, not violence, that authority of this nation will always be peacefully transferred. I believe the power of the presidency and the purpose is to unite this nation, not divide it, to lift us up, not tear us apart. It's about us, not about me, with a nod to Bernie Sanders, or there should have been one. Deep in the heart of this America burns a flame lit almost 250 years ago of liberty, freedom, and equality. This is not a land of kings or dictators or autocrats. We're a nation of laws, of order, not chaos, of peace, not violence. Here in America, the people rule through the ballot, and their will prevails. So let us remember together, we're one nation, under God, indivisible, that today, tomorrow, and forever at our best, we are the United States of America. Again, it was a great speech. It was the best speech that Joe Biden has ever delivered, and it was exactly what was needed at this moment. So now, what I want to do is I rush through to get this in before it's time for Howie. I want to go back to that night, to January 6th, 1 year ago tonight. And remember, Congress was in the process of certifying the votes of the Electoral College votes. And then they were so rudely interrupted by, you know, an insurrection. But then they came back. They came back into the chambers, and they finished the work that they were there to do. And, well, Lindsey Graham made me cry that night, because I watched all of this, as I'm sure you did too. We watched it unfold in front of us live on television, thinking that this might be the end of this experiment in what we in America call a democracy. It's not a real democracy, it's an American democracy. But Lindsey Graham got up on the floor and, well, here's some of what he said. Right here.
Graham now is making his remarks.
And Louisiana do it. To hold the country hostage to end Reconstruction.
Okay.
It worked.
Here we go.
The commission was 8-7. It didn't work. Nobody accepted it. The way it ended is when Hayes did a deal.
Okay,
well, these three
this
states,
is not the part I wanted to
you
play,
give me
but we'll get
electors,
past this in a second.
I'll kick the Union Army out. The rest is history.
Talk history.
It led to Jim Crow. If you're looking for historical guidance, this is not the one to pick.
I think Lindsey had a few. Tossed back a few before
people,
he came back to the chamber.
There was no fraud. Having a commission chosen by Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and John Roberts is not going to get you to where you want to go.
It'd be better than listening to Donald Trump.
It ain't going to work.
Well, neither will Donald Trump.
So it's not going to do any good.
Okay, well, that's bullshit.
It's going to delay.
Okay,
and it gives
get past
credibility
this.
To a dark chapter of our history.
This is the
that's
dark chapter
I'm
of our history.
That's why I'm not with you.
Okay, here you go.
But I will fight to my death for you. You're able to object. You're not doing anything wrong. Other people have objected.
Yeah, sorry. I meant to cue in.
It's a uniquely bad idea.
Okay,
here's to delay this election.
Get
Trump
you.
And I. Have,
right here.
We've
right
had
here.
A hell of a journey.
Hell of a journey.
I hate it to end this way.
I hate
oh
it to
God,
end this
it.
Way, he
From
said.
From my point of view, he's been a consequential president.
Well, no.
But today, first thing you'll see.
But today.
All I can say.
Enough.
Is count me out.
Count
enough
me out.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
I've tried to be helpful.
I tried to be helpful.
But when
count
the
me
Wisconsin
out.
Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled 4-3 that they didn't violate the Constitution of Wisconsin. I agree with the three, but I accept the four.
Accept
if Al Gore can accept 5-4, he's not president. I can accept Wisconsin 4-3.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania. It went to the Second Circuit. So much for all the judges being in Trump's pocket. They said, no, you're wrong.
They said, no, you're wrong. Because he was wrong.
Second Circuit, that Trump's lawsuit wasn't
right. He accepted that.
Georgia, they said the Secretary of State took the law in his own hands. He changed the election laws unlawfully.
No, he didn't.
A federal judge said, no, I accept the federal judge, even though I don't agree with it.
He did then.
Fraud.
He doesn't know.
They said there's 66,000 people in Georgia under 18 voted. How many people believe that?
All right, this part, I
asked,
don't know what he's
give
saying.
Give me 10. And I had one. They said 8,000 felons in prison in Arizona voted. Give me 10. I hadn't gotten one.
All right, Lindsey, get to the meat
does
that of
it say
now.
There's problems in every election. I don't buy this. Enough's enough. We got to end it. Vice President Pence.
Here we go.
what they're asking you to do, you won't do because you can't.
That's right. You can't.
You talk about interesting times. I associate myself with Rand Paul. How many times will you hear that? The mob has done something nobody else could do to get me and Rand to agree. Rand is
right. Well, to get you to disavow Trump.
If you're
for
a conservative,
a moment.
This is the most offensive concept in the world, that a single person could disenfranchise 155 million people.
You think?
The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be president.
Hello.
Where in there does it say Mike can say, I don't like the results?
It doesn't. Nowhere.
I want to send them back to the states. I
Nowhere.
Believe it was fraud. To the conservatives who believe in the Constitution, now is your chance to stand up and be counted.
Hello.
Originalism, count me in. It means what it says. So, Mike, Mr. Vice President, just hang in there. They said we can count on Mike. All of us can count on the Vice President. You're going to do the right thing. You're going to do the constitutional thing. You got a son who flies F-35s. You got a son-in-law who flies F-18s. They're out there flying so that we can get it right here. There are people dying, to my good friend from Illinois, to make sure we have a chance to argue among ourselves. And when it's over, it is over. It is over.
It is over.
Final thing. Joe Biden. I've traveled the world with Joe.
Joe Biden.
I hoped he lost. I prayed he would lose. He won.
He won.
He's the legitimate president of the United States.
You hear that?
I cannot convince people, certain groups, by my words, but I will tell you by my actions, that maybe I, among any, above all others in this body, need to say this. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are lawfully elected and will become the president and the vice president of the United States on January the 20th.
And I'm not the only one clapping.
ABC News viewers.
They clapped there as well. So you're wondering, so Lindsay actually did the right thing there. Yeah, and it lasted for all of about maybe 36 hours. Because did you hear what he tweeted? And I read you bits and pieces of Joe Biden's speech today. And Lindsey Graham tweets out, "What brazen politicization of January 6th by President Biden. I wonder if the Taliban, who now rule Afghanistan with al-Qaeda elements present, contrary to President Biden's beliefs, are allowing this speech to be carried." What? What does that even mean? What the hell? Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. I hate it to end this way. Oh, my God, I hate it. But from my point of view, he's been a consequential president. But today, first thing you'll see, all I can say is, count me out. Enough is enough. Hey, Lindsey Graham, I got a little song for you.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole. It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole. His name is
Lindsey Graham,
and he's the new world's biggest asshole. Oh yeah.
What a piece of shit he is. Right? That night, I'm telling you, I'm watching that. I'm like, thank God. Oh my God, this is what I took. Okay, we can recover from this. And then the ensuing year happened. But you know what? Lindsay wasn't alone. You heard in the thing I played for you from Mehdi Hassan's show, Mitch McConnell. This was that same night, that very same night, January 6th, or might have at this point been the morning of January 7th, because they worked late into the night to certify this election. But Mitch McConnell said,
"There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it.
No question about
it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. And having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth.
He said it so clearly that night. Why couldn't he keep saying it? Oh, and then he said this. Yes.
This election were overturned by mere allegations from the losing side, our democracy would enter a death spiral. We'd never see the whole nation accept an election again.
Well, that is very true. Okay, Mitch McConnell. So then why the hell did you block any efforts to have a full and fair and bipartisan, or actually independent, investigation to uncover how this all happened, to hold the people responsible for it? And then they turn around and blame the Democrats for a partisan witch hunt, which it is not at all. By the way, you know who showed up? What Republican showed up at the House for today's remembrance, which started after the president spoke, a speech by Nancy Pelosi in the House chamber? Two Republicans showed up. No, not Adam Kinzinger. The House is not back in session yet. They're still out. They don't come back until next week. And most of the senators used the excuse of former Senator Johnny Isaacson, who died over the weekend, his funeral is allegedly today, to leave D.C. so they wouldn't have to be there for this. The only two Republicans in the room both had the last name of Cheney. You know, Dick, name fitting, was a member of Congress. And once you're a member of Congress, you have lifetime floor privileges. Did you know that? I didn't. I do now. Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney were the only two Republicans who showed up at the Capitol today to commemorate this occasion, to pay tribute to the heroes who saved their lives, not Dick's life, but Liz. It's reprehensible. And all these people who, as it was unfolding, and that night, were still shaking out of fear, have now completely gone back because power is more important to them than keeping this country intact, than keeping what we call a democracy in one piece. It is astounding. Astounding. And the fact that all those things that Joe Biden told us in the speech, the way the day unfolded, the attacks on the Capitol, all happened. But so many of those people who watch outlets like Fox Not News or OAN or Newsmax, or get their information from Facebook, or even worse, sites like Breitbart or Gateway Pundit or one of a million other disinformation sites on the interwebs, they never heard what really happened because they've got blinders on and they will only get their information from the sources that lie to them. With every fucking breath, all they do is lie. Maybe we should have a law against lying. Like any member, elected representative who uses their public office to spread lies, to propagandize, there should be a law against that. Although I guess they wouldn't be able to pass it because half of them at least love to lie. I'm not saying no Democrats do either. I'm just saying there, hell of a lot more of them are Republicans. Oh my God. It is opposite world. They do one thing and they say another. They still are, you know, I've got so much more, but you know what? It's time for Howie. And I don't know about you, but I could really use a Dirty Debbie. So whose turn is it? Who's mixing them up today? Make them extra strong. You know, put in a double shot or something. Okay? All right. Let's get Howie.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, hi, Howie Klein. Happy Insurrection Day, I guess.
Yeah, is Happy Treason Day.
Yeah, Treason Day, that's a good name for it. We need to come up with a name for it, because years from now, children should learn about what happened on January 6th, 2021. And maybe even read Joe Biden's speech to understand what really happened, rather than the propaganda that's being foisted upon the public by the people who made this possible.
Who would have ever thought that Joe Biden would give a good speech in his whole life?
Right?
But he did.
Yeah, I agree. I said earlier, I think it is the best speech he's ever delivered. And it was exactly the speech he needed to deliver today, I thought.
Yeah, he did well. I was, like, surprised.
You and me both.
Because a lot of people, you know, are finished listening to him. They don't want to hear him. You know, I asked a close friend to listen to it, and he said, no, you know, I'm finished with Joe Biden. Right. I don't want to hear his bullshit.
Right.
And I said, no, this is really good. It's really worth listening to. And we'll see later. He's going to come over.
Oh, good. Well, what I did, because, you know, Joe is not the most electrifying speaker ever. I took the transcript. Now, because, you know, time was limited in the first half hour of the show, I didn't have time to read the whole thing, but I read excerpts from it in a more animated fashion than Joe. And I'm going to put the text of the speech along with the show on today's post, so that people can read it themselves, because I think it's more impactful that way. Because, again, Joe is not the best speechifier.
No, although he did well today.
He did.
Actually did. I mean, usually it's I cringe when I hear him speaking. But
you and me both.
You know, and it was only one cringe for me while I listened to it.
At any part in particular? Was it just his delivery, or was something
he
said?
No, it wasn't about the context. It was just him. Just his delivery.
Yeah.
We cringe.
I gotcha. No, I agree. This is a tough day. The thing that I've been focusing on that has really been playing, you know, that has preoccupied me for the past year is the hypocrisy. I know it's nothing new, but for instance, did you read Lindsey Graham's tweet today?
I didn't see it, no.
Oh my goodness. Hold on, let me pull it up again. He the man is shameless. He knows no shame. He wrote, "What brazen politicization of January 6th by President Biden. I wonder if the Taliban, who now rule Afghanistan with Al-Qaeda elements present, contrary to President Biden's beliefs, are allowing this speech to be carried."
Ah. What?
Right? What?
What the hell does that mean?
Lindsey's drinking again is what I think it means. It's the only thing I could figure. And thankfully, the responses on Twitter were golden. I mean, boy, talk about getting ratioed and getting, you know, they went after him and everything. You know, just a few examples. New York City Southpaw, who does a great Twitter account, says, "Next thing you know, President Biden might politicize U.S. Senator from South Carolina Lindsey Graham's call to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger." Because, you know, Graham told him to throw out the votes. And there's more like that. So a lot of journalists hit back at him as well. So, you know, I went back and played the gist of Lindsey's little inebriated January 6th evening speech from the floor of the Senate, when he said, "I'm done. Enough. I was with him, but I can't do this anymore. I'm done." Yeah, that didn't last very long.
No, it didn't. No, he's just, you know, like any, you know, valueless politician, he's just looking to see which way the wind is blowing, and he jumps in that direction.
It's really sad, more than anything else. it's just sad. You see these people who, you know, Lindsey Graham, there was a time there when he could have pivoted. He could have gone either way. He could have been a good guy. And he chose to throw in with Donald Trump, which makes me still wonder what Trump's got on him. I believe that there are pictures.
Could be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a secret. Everyone in Washington knows that he is a closet case.
Yep.
I mean, it's not everyone knows. I mean, no one doesn't know. And he hasn't really hidden it. I mean, he's hidden it partially from the people of South Carolina, but he doesn't hide it in Washington.
Huh.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump had pictures either.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Who knows? The whole thing, it's just so distasteful. And I was hoping these people would go away. But you know what? DHS is now saying today that there's an uptick in chatter about violence against Democratic lawmakers.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Manchin.
someone post his address or something. Yeah. You know, if they're going to go after somebody. I don't know. And then, so did you hear what Republicans showed up in the House chamber today for the commemoration, for the basically the...
Well, I didn't hear. I would guess it was Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney.
Well, Adam Kinzinger was not there. By the way, you know, the House isn't back in session yet. They're not back until next week. So maybe he's just not back in D.C. yet. Who knows? I'm not making excuses for him. Adam Kinzinger was not there. Liz Cheney was.
Yeah.
One other Republican was there with her.
Oh, I don't know.
Her father.
I got my fourth COVID shot today.
Oh, you did?
I've been out of...
I got
gotcha.
You.
That's why I haven't been keeping up much.
I got gotcha. You. Well, Big Dick showed up. Dick Cheney. It was Dick and Liz Cheney together, the two lone Republicans in the House chamber, as they paid tribute to the police that saved them that day, as they commemorated this most, you know, the only attack on the U.S. Capitol in American history. Liz and Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney said something, God, I got to find his quote. It was something to the effect of, I've never been here. This is not leadership that resembles any of the folks I knew. So apparently...
Talking about McCarthy.
Yeah. He was asked by Jonathan Carl of ABC News why he was there. And Cheney replied, it's an important historical event. You can't overestimate how important it is. And then Jonathan Carl said about his conversation, quote, he told me that he is deeply disappointed in the Republican leadership, and he was specifically talking about how they've handled the events of January 6th and the aftermath, and what he described as a failure to defend the Constitution, and added, it's not leadership that resembles any of the folks I knew when I was here for 10 years. So that's what I say, and apparently there was even a small line of some 20 or 30 of the Democrats who were there, who lined up to greet him, I guess to thank him for being there. Dick Cheney has to be one of the more heinous, a former, you know, executive mancha, executive level, you know, presidents or vice presidents in our history. But the fact that he's willing to stand up and say the right thing here, I think is admirable.
Right. What he's saying is admirable.
Right.
And that he's doing it is admirable.
That's right.
He's not admirable.
No, he's not admirable. Not at all. But the fact is, he's not willing to put party over country. But maybe that's because he's 80 years old and he's not looking for another job. So it's not going to affect his future, you know, up or down. But then again, there's his daughter. And when asked about her, he said, Liz can take care of herself.
Yeah. Well, he was... They're helping to take care of her.
That's right.
But, you know, she's, you know, I can't see any path to victory for her. I just, you know, I looked, I tried to figure it out if she could have, if there's anything that she could do or if there's any way, there's none.
She's, really?
You know, it's really very brave of her to keep doing this, but she's going to go right down, she's going to go down swinging.
So do you not see, Howie, any way for some form of a reasonable Republican Party to emerge from this?
No, I don't.
Wow. So all these never Trumpers, all these people.
Never, in fact, is what I see, because as the mainstream conservatives get picked off, which is what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and people like Kinzinger and Gonzalez as they're driven out of the party, and now there'll be a lot more driven out of the party as they go. It leaves a more radical base. Even if some of the Republican seats go to Democrats, the Republicans that are left are going to be more radical, more like Trump, more out of their minds. I mean, the ones that are running are really scary, and you know, I see the Republican Party getting worse and worse. Now, will it get better eventually? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, really, what I've been thinking about for a long time and writing about is really more of a three party system,
huh,
where there would be like a kind of a fascist party, which is what the Republicans are morphing into.
Right.
Where some, and then a conservative party in the middle, which is, you know, most of the Republicans and about half of the Democrats come together and, you know, into a centrist conservative party, and then a progressive party. So you got the progressives on the left, you got the fascists on the right, and then in the middle you have a whole horrible mushmash of careerist corporate garbage.
Well, you know, that's interesting because we do have a two-party system, but it's not enshrined in the Constitution. In fact, political parties are not in the Constitution. So I guess it could happen.
Yeah, I think it will happen. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be the new thing. There have been new parties that have come and gone, but I just don't see how conservative Republicans are going to be able to, you know, figure out how to deal with out and out fascists. I mean, none of them like Matt Gaetz or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or Madison Cawthorn. Their skin crawls around, mm-hmm, these kind of people. And that's the new the new leadership of the Republican Party. I mean, I don't think that Kevin McCarthy is going to last as speaker.
Hell no.
They'll get rid of him pronto.
Yeah, he won't become speaker, even if they take
he
back.
He becomes speaker and they'll get rid of him.
Oh, really?
But
you think
he
will?
If they got rid of Boehner, who is to the right of McCarthy, they're not going to let a worm like McCarthy stay in as speaker very long,
mm-hmm,
especially if Trump winds up being, God forbid, president again.
God.
It just can't happen.
So, Howie Klein, let me ask you this, because I've had this discussion with a number of people, and what I've noticed is that they're talking about the big resignation, how 450,000 people quit their jobs in November or December or whatever it is. I'm seeing an exodus. I'm seeing a lot of people who have money leaving the country. Are you seeing any of that?
Well, yeah, I'm on the same mailing list.
Oh, that's right, you are. So,
there are people leaving. You know, some of our friends have left. You know, look, I left when Nixon became president. Mm-hmm. I left the country, stayed out for almost 7 years, and in the end, I loved the time I was out of the country. It was one of the most important things in my life in every way imaginable. It was a great, great experience. But in the end, I was an American. I remember waking up one day having dreamt in Dutch. I was living in Amsterdam at the time. And I realized that I was dreaming in Dutch. And I said, nope, I'm going home.
Wow.
And I came back to the U.S.
And who was president?
I'm an American. You know, take it or leave it. You know, it was great to leave. But, you know, so what happens if, you know, this Tinseltown Hitler becomes, or someone worse, becomes president. I don't know. I mean, I'm old now. I can't see leaving the country, packing up and going. I just don't see it.
Right.
For myself. If I were in my 20s or 30s,
yeah,
I would consider it strongly, like I did last time. I mean, it's not that horrible of a thing. You know, you can do it. It's a great, great experience. I'll just tell you something. When I started my own record company,
mm-hmm,
I was very, very poor. I had no money. I literally every week had to decide, am I going to put gas in my tank or am I going to eat?
Wow.
I know people might think I'm joking. I wasn't. That was the reality. And eventually my life changed in a very big way. I went to work at Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. and I remember they were looking for a new president of Reprise, which is half the company,
right.
basically.
Mm.
And the reason, I mean, there were maybe more than one reason, but the reason that I certainly wasn't high up in the seniority. There were 20 people who had more seniority than me.
Huh.
But they picked me to be president, which was obviously, in a financial sense, was a life-changing event. But why? It was because I had lived overseas for so long, and they realized that the future of the company had to do with being able to relate internationally, which I was famous for. And that had a big part in it. And, you know, when I went overseas, all of my friends were going to, you know, it was right when I graduated from college, and all of my friends were going to grad school. They were going, you know, medical school or law school. And I was the one that was like going to live overseas, and everybody felt sorry for me.
Wow.
And then I wound up as the president of a large corporation.
Yeah, so you left specifically because Nixon came in.
I left for a few reasons. Nixon was a big, important thing. I was having nightmares every night about the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm.
and thinking that, you know, if I bought a sandwich and there was a sales tax on it, that money was going to build a bomb that was going to be killing men, women, and children in Vietnam,
wow.
and it was just eating away at me. And so, you know, there were a few reasons. Nixon became president was one of the reasons. But you know, the police were hot on my trail. I was dealing drugs, and they were like, you know, doing everything they could to catch me. And although they were really, really stupid, and you know, would overlook like, you know, simple things like, oh, there's a pound of hash on the front, in a brown paper bag on the front seat of my car when they pulled me over. They would like take the car apart, take the wheels off the car, do everything,
and not look in the back.
But, you know, I figured sooner or later they're going to look at the paper bag on the front seat and I'm going to go to jail.
Right.
So, like I said, there were a lot of reasons. Nixon was a very important one. You know, and then the other was, like, I wanted to see the world.
Right.
You know, that was part of it as well.
Yeah, and that's great that you did that.
When I got to Europe, one of the first things I did was, you know, I bought a Volkswagen van, sold a bunch of drugs, bought a Volkswagen van, a camper van, with a bed and a sink and a fridge, and I drove to India. And I spent 2 years on the road, you know, in Turkey and Iran and Afghanistan and Pakistan, India, Sri Lanka, Nepal, you know, and that's mostly India. But that's what I wanted. I wanted to, you know, see that world and experience it. That's not something that can be done now. I mean, you can experience something else.
And but a lot of those places you can't even go to anymore because of
right.
the- Right.
I mean, you can, but you get killed.
Right.
I mean, if you want to go to Afghanistan,
you can't come back.
It's very dangerous.
Right. Right.
Iran, you know, you could easily wind up getting arrested and spending time in jail. I mean, yeah, it's not a safe. It was never really safe. It was always a dangerous situation. But it was, you know, one of the most fantastic experiences I had in my life. You know, spending that time doing that, and I can't encourage it enough. For people to go, for people who are, you know, not my age, but people who are younger,
right.
to just put off whatever the plan is now, and take some time to do that, and you know, if you can, you know, hang with that kind of thing, if you can, you know, just sort of, you know, I didn't. It's not like I had any plan.
Right.
I got in my van, and I started driving, and you know, oh wow, this is a nice city. I'll stay here for a few weeks or months.
Two things, though.
Wow, these people are wonderful, and they invited me to stay at their house.
Wow. Yep.
I love them.
Yep. See, I would have loved to have done something like that, but two things. One, as a woman, it's not as safe as it is for a guy to do that. Just
okay, times 10.
Times 10, right. Exactly. So that's one reason why I didn't do. And the other is, you know, youth is wasted on the young. I would have, but I was so driven, like I thought, I can't take time off. Like some of my friends went to Europe, went to Israel, went around for a few months. It's like, no, I have to work. I've got to move up in my career. And I never took the time to do anything like that.
Right.
And I wish I had.
People to put off.
Yeah.
And you know, that doesn't mean you're going to have the same experience that I did. But, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. Absolutely. But like what I'm saying is, I wound up, you know, because I didn't go to grad school at that point, and because, you know, I did put off trying to advance my career, I wound up very, very luckily doing something that, you know, I never, look, my father was, my parents were poor. They were middle, or lower middle class. They didn't make a lot of money. There was, you know, when I started off my own life, I wasn't making a lot of money. I didn't have expectations of it. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't my goal. And yet I wound up, getting a job that is, you know, like mind blowing.
Right. Right.
And why? Because I took off
right.
the time. And didn't think about advancing myself, but just did it, and it worked out great. You never know, and I'm not saying that if people do that, it's necessarily going to happen to them, but maybe it will.
Right.
You don't know. I mean, and if people think, well, if I do that, I'm going to, you know, screw up my whole life. I can attest that isn't necessarily the case.
True. Yeah, I would love for instance for Allison to do something like that, but. She's a woman, and I would never, ever tell her to travel the world on her own. A girl needs somebody to go with, and that's always the problem. That was always my problem, not having the person to do it with me.
So we had, you know, I experienced this before I set off on my big journey. Mm-hmm. I did a smaller journey because I went with my girlfriend,
uh-huh.
and we traveled around Europe together, and then we went down to Morocco, and that's where I saw the problem, where men, you know, would see a woman who wasn't properly covered up all the way.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Morocco is safer now than it was then. And they would get, you know, it was like I almost had to be in a fight every day because I was traveling with a young, beautiful woman. So it's a problem. You know, it's not as much of a problem in Morocco, but it is in other places. So you have to be very, very careful. And when I went on the big trip, you know, what I would do is I would pick up people who were trying to go in the same direction, and they would pay for a share of the gas and any other expenses, and they were welcome to be in my car. And you know, going on this trip all the way from Europe to India, it's not like, you know, it's not like this, it's not easy to do. It's hard. So
sure.
If you find someone who's driving and you can get in their car and be part of the caravan, you're much safer. That was the way the hippie trail was. And at one point we picked up these two Danes. I picked up these two Danish people. One of them was an exquisite blonde woman, and her boyfriend looked as good as she did. And everywhere, everybody wanted to screw them. And we had a fight all the time. It was literally, there were physical fights because guys would you know, grab her.
Ooh.
And you have to defend her.
Yeah.
So it was
yeah.
always like a hassle. I mean, I remember we were in this small town in called Kizikali. It's not a small town anymore, but then it was. And we were staying with a family. And the guy, the older son of the family, who was kind of our host, he literally had to, like, you know, beat up these two people in the village because they attacked this woman.
Oh my!
And it was, you know, obviously it was a disgrace on his household for his, you know, his visitors that he was hosting to be attacked like that. It was a pretty awful thing. So it's very, very tough for women.
Yes.
To travel in those parts of the world. On the other hand, there are places where it isn't difficult.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you could certainly go to places like Japan or China.
Hmm.
And like I said, Morocco is much better than it used to be. Things are getting better for women than they were. But, you know, you just have to pick and choose.
Right.
A woman can certainly go to, you know, Europe and travel around there.
That's true. You know, this is a good time to mention that, Howie Klein, you are certainly the most traveled person I know. And you have another blog aside from downwithtyranny.com. It's aroundtheworldblog.blogspot.com because you've traveled everywhere. But what's so sad is I just looked at it and the last entry is from September of 2020.
Aren't I horrible?
Well, because you haven't been anywhere. It's not, you're not going anywhere. It's COVID time.
No, I know. I should. And you know what? I sometimes write travel-related stuff on my you know, that's also related to politics.
Right. Yep.
I have a great one on my blog now about Ottoman Turkey. So it's got kind of a combination of history
mm-hmm.
and travel and a lot of different. It's a big mishmash of things, but people love it. I mean, it happens to be a really good post, and I would recommend people go to my blog downwithtyranny.com, and they'll find it really, really easily. It's on the front page.
Okay.
It's picture of, like, you know, kind of an Ottoman. It has the word Ottoman in it.
Yep.
And there's a picture of, you know,
there it ancient. Is. The U.S. Turkish. Is at an Ottoman crossroads. I see.
Yes.
Yep.
Right, because and what I should have done is also cross posted it on my travel blog. But
absolutely,
I'll tell you the truth. I'm embarrassed to say this. I forgot how to post on Blogspot. I'm embarrassed. I have to figure it out again, but I just sort of forgot how to do it. I haven't done it since 2020.
Well, for those who are interested and you're thinking about when the fog lifts from COVID, traveling, Howie's Around the World blog.blogspot.com is great, because is there anywhere, where in the world have you not been?
Well, there is a friend of mine who you know as well, who has better traveled than I am.
Yes.
And that's Alan Grayson.
Right.
And he has been to places that I haven't been, like, for example, North Korea.
Ooh.
And Antarctica.
Wow.
But, yeah, so we travel in a different way. I mean, you know, he traveled a lot before, but when, as a member of Congress, he got to travel in a more kind of official capacity and got to go to dangerous places where the government was protecting him. Or he had some kind of protection, a diplomatic protection. But on the other hand, he has a tendency more, you know, to stay in nicer hotels.
Right.
I mean, which I do now. So we travel the same way now. But yes. Back in my day, you know, I was sleeping in my van.
Right, right. But you've also traveled the world in luxury. One of your favorite places to go now is Turkey. Of all, I would never even think to go to Turkey.
Oh my God! It is absolutely one of my favorite places, and I've been there like a dozen times. And you know, when we talk about where we're going to go when this COVID horror is finished, you know, there are a bunch of different places that we're thinking about going. Turkey is high up on the list. Mm. Morocco is high up on the list. Spain, Italy, France—they're all high up on the list. Thailand, they're all places that I love to go. But Turkey is a big, huge country that is not, you know, it's not like one thing. There's a lot going on there that are very, very different. You go to one, it's like when you go to America, people will go to America from Europe and say, yeah, I've been to the U.S.
Right.
And
where?
They've never been out of
right.
Manhattan.
Right.
And
right.
So they haven't been to the U.S. or they've never been out of Miami.
Yeah.
And they think they've been to the U.S.
Gotcha.
But, and Turkey's the same way. People go to Istanbul and they think they've been to Turkey, and yeah, they've been to Istanbul. But you know, Turkey's amazing with lots and lots of different things that most tourists never see.
And what's the town that you like going to? I know there's one hotel in particular you love. Where is that?
Well, there are a lot of hotels that I love, but there's one carved into a mountainside, and not only do I love it, but the guy who owns it said if people come to the hotel and say that I sent them, that yep. he would give them a 20% discount. And several of my friends or people who I know through the blog have done it. And
oh,
yes, he gives them a 20% discount.
That's awesome.
And it's not very expensive. It's an inexpensive hotel anyway. And it's one of the best areas of Turkey.
What?
It's called, Cappadocia.
Cappadocia.
So Cappadocia is one of the places that I would recommend everybody go to at some point in their life. Not only is this hotel like amazing, which is good enough, but not far from it, although not easy to find, but the owner of the hotel lent me his car and told me how to get there. It's in another town. It was the best restaurant in the whole country. It was just unbelievable. It's called the Greek Farm, and it is literally a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere where you make an appointment to go there, and then they make dinner for you. And
and
every time you finish eating, this is literal, you finish eating and they see that your plate is empty, they just bring you a whole other dinner. And they insist you keep eating.
Oh, my.
And you know, we ate there 10 times. It was so wonderful.
Wow. I got to ask, have you seen what's going on in Kazakhstan now?
Yeah. Yes, I just finished writing about it for tonight. So,
did you?
The story, I have a Kazakhstan story. And what I said, and I thought about you when I wrote it, what I said is that you won't find an American who can point to Kazakhstan on a map.
Except me.
And then I thought, oh, but Nicole.
Except me. And it's a huge, huge country in terms of volume. It's not that populous.
The ninth biggest country in the world.
Yeah. And people don't know it exists.
Think about Kazakhstan. Texas, California, and Florida combined.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Alaska, Texas, and California combined.
Uh-huh.
So the three biggest states in the country, Kazakhstan is bigger
right.
than all three of them combined.
Right. It's huge. And also it's
and
where
can't
it's...
point to it on a map.
No. And until Borat, people didn't even know it existed. I'd say Kazakhstan. I'm adopting my daughter from Kazakhstan. They'd go, what? Where? They never heard, like educated people had never heard of it. Oh, that's right. The Borat place. That's what they know. But it's also the where it's geographically located. It's right between Russia and China. So it's a very strategic location. And it's all, and I got to tell you, I spent a month there when I adopted Allison, and the people couldn't have been nicer. It was very civilized. I'm heartbroken seeing the footage. Almaty, the city where I stayed, gunshots, people getting killed in the streets. It's frightening.
Yeah. You mean now they're getting killed in the streets?
Now they're getting killed. And back then it was wonderful. It was easy. It was safe.
It was easy and safe for you because you were an American.
Right.
But even before they got their independence, when they were still part of the Soviet Union, they had a dictator.
Yes.
The guy who ran it for the Soviets is a dictator.
Yep.
And from the day of independence, he became the dictator.
Yes, and he was there until
2019.
Right.
He was forced to resign.
That's right.
But he's still behind the scenes. He's still running the show.
But they pulled down the statue of him standing in the big square. So, I mean, this is... And so the new president called Putin and asked for peacekeeping forces to come in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Russian paratroopers are now in the country shooting. I have a video up on my, like I said, I did a story for tonight. I have a video up of Russian paratroopers shooting demonstrators.
Oh God. It's heartbreaking. You know, there have been times, to be honest with you, over the last 5 years, for example, when I've wondered if I did Allison a favor by bringing her here. And now I can say absolutely yes. I'm glad she's out of there. I don't know that this is the perfect place, but I'm glad she's not there.
Right. Right. And I don't know. Did you read today that Florida had the most insurrectionists of any state
yes,
going to the Capitol?
I did. They came from here.
Yep. I would have guessed Texas.
Yeah, so would I.
You know, Florida second, but nope. It was Florida was first, Texas and Pennsylvania tied for second.
And did you hear what our brilliant governor said today? When he was talking about, the Democrats there, you know, they think January 6th to them is like Christmas. Like, fuck you, Christmas. And then he said, but the FBI, this is all an FBI operation. It was an inside job, basically. So the man is a...
What does that even mean?
I don't know. That they were complicit, that they planted people to storm the Capitol and be insurrectionists. It makes no sense. But
Shouldn't that disqualify Ron DeSantis from being the governor again, let alone the president?
Yes. Yes. Right there, it should.
He's just repeating QAnon nonsense.
That's right. That's right. Plus, I believe he had COVID. I think he still does. There's video of him floating around from yesterday. He made an appearance. And, you know, he was missing for 2 weeks. We watched that video. He's in pain. He's not doing well. And then this weekend, though, after people complained that he was missing for 2 weeks and wondering where he was, he shows up on stage at some Christian music concert with his wife, who's undergoing chemotherapy for breast cancer, on the stage next to him and not a mask in sight.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice people.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Here we have an Orange County just like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And in our Orange County, one of the Republican women running for assembly, was one of the issues that she was running on was anti-mandates, anti-mask, anti-vaccine, and she wasn't vaccinated herself, and she's dead now.
Oh, well, that's a fitting end to that story.
Yep.
All right. Well, Howie Klein, thank you for taking our mind off the ugliness for a while. I'd rather talk to you about traveling the world than insurrectionists storming the Capitol any day. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and check out the aroundtheworldblog.blogspot.com. I'll link to it from my blog where I post today's show. Howie, as always, thank you, and we'll talk next week.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. With that, we're done. There's some overtime for you today. All right, I will leave you with the news. And then tomorrow, I'm not sure what we're doing tomorrow yet. We may take a break from politics. Tomorrow may be the day I decide that I'm going to play the Joe Biden speech in its entirety. Because a lot of people didn't hear it. I mean, it was 9 a.m. out here when a lot of people are working. 6 a.m. on the West Coast. And this is a speech that people need to hear. So maybe we'll do a hybrid. Maybe I'll play the Biden speech and maybe we'll do a musical thing. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Or something may pop up and I'll have a guest. We'll see. If you have any suggestions, feel free to send me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. All right. With that, I will leave you with the news and I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you. Thanks for listening, everyone. And I don't know what we say about today. But by next year, we need to come up with a name for it. And you don't wish someone a happy Insurrection Day or a happy Treason Day. You say, may this never happen again. And I don't know, I was going to say death to Smoochie or something. I would say death to someone else, but I don't want to be visited by the Secret Service. So on that note, see you tomorrow, everyone. Bye. Here's the news.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So at this moment, we must decide, what kind of nation are we going to be? Are we going to be a nation that accepts political violence as a norm? Are we going to be a nation where we allow partisan election officials to overturn the legally expressed will of the people? Are we going to be a nation that lives not by the light of the truth, but in the shadow of lies? We cannot allow ourselves to be that kind of nation. The way forward is to recognize the truth and to live by it.
1 year ago today, January 6th, 2021, rioters protesting the results of the 2020 presidential election attacked the U.S. Capitol, breaching the headquarters of American democracy, and attempted to overturn the results of a free and fair election. Events are scheduled throughout the day, most designed to preserve the narratives of the attack, as the perpetrators of the events of that day continue a propagandistic gaslighting campaign to convince America that we didn't see what we absolutely saw happening that day. Few, if any, Republicans are expected to attend any of the day's events, most using the funeral of former Senator Johnny Isaacson as an excuse. The day officially began at 9 a.m. Eastern, as Vice President Kamala Harris and President Joe Biden delivered speeches from Statuary Hall, Biden focusing on the danger posed by Trump's ongoing lies about the election results.
You can't love your country only when you win. You can't obey the law only when it's convenient. You can't be patriotic when you embrace and enable lies. Those who stormed this Capitol and those who instigated and incited and those who called on them to do so held a dagger at the throat of America and American democracy. They didn't come here out of patriotism or principle. They came here in rage, not in service of America, but rather in service of one man. Those who incited the mob, the real plotters who were desperate to deny the certification of this election, defy the will of the voters. But their plot was foiled. Congressmen, Democrats, and Republicans stayed. Senators, representatives, staff, they finished their work the Constitution demanded. They honored their oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We're living at an inflection point in history, both at home and abroad. We're engaged anew in a struggle between democracy and autocracy, between the aspirations of the many and the greed of the few, between the people's right of self-determination and self-seeking autocrat.
The former guy thankfully scrapped his plans to hold a press conference tonight at Mar-a-Lago, announcing instead that he'd give his lying and bitching speech on January 15th at a rally in Phoenix. Attorney General Merrick Garland addressed the Department of Justice and the nation on Wednesday, seemingly to push back on the complaints and reassure Americans that he is going after everyone who perpetrated or participated in the insurrection in what is the biggest investigation in FBI history.
The actions we have taken thus far
will not be our last. The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under law, whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy. We will follow the facts wherever they lead.
More than 700 people have been arrested for participating in the insurrection. The FBI is still looking for another 350 suspects, including 250 people accused of assaulting police officers. Meanwhile, the House Select Committee investigating the attack has been doing most of its work out of the public view. But that will soon change. They've issued more than 50 subpoenas to individuals and organizations, including some of Trump's closest allies. They're promising many public hearings are coming, during which they will expose the actions of Trump and other leaders surrounding the attack. But then there's this. The Washington Post reporting that at least 163 Republicans who embraced Trump's big lie are running for statewide positions that would give them authority over the administration of elections. But on the other hand, The Hill is reporting today that in the year since the January 6th attack, a handful of Democrats, constitutional scholars, and pro-democracy advocates have been quietly exploring how a post-Civil War amendment to the Constitution might be used to disqualify the former president from ever holding office again. Calls for Congress to take steps to strip Trump of his eligibility, which reached a peak in the aftermath of last January 6th, have since decreased, but those who remain engaged on the issue say discussions about applying Section 3 of the 14th Amendment continue. In other news, a state of emergency in Kazakhstan, as the president invited Russia to send in peacekeeping forces to help quell a growing protest movement. The protests began on Sunday over a big increase in fuel prices and quickly snowballed amid broader discontent with Kazakhstan's leadership. Protesters have set fire to government buildings, stormed an airport in the country's largest city, Almaty, and violently clashed with police. Authorities have blocked internet access across the country, and the president accepted the resignation of the government Wednesday morning in a failed attempt to restore order. As someone who spent a month in Kazakhstan some 20 years ago to adopt my daughter, I'm heartbroken watching the developments in Kazakhstan as closely as possible, and worrying that we might be headed in the same direction. Despite the lies being fed to the American people by the right-wing propaganda machine, the economy is doing quite well, thank you very much. The U.S. economy added 807,000 new jobs in December. That's more than double what economists had predicted. The Congressional Progressive Caucus has endorsed legislation to expand the Supreme Court by 4 seats. The chair of the caucus, Pramila Jayapal, said the current bench was filled by a partisan, right-wing effort to entrench a radical, anti-democratic faction and erode human rights that have been won over decades. And two people are happy this morning. Two winning tickets were sold in the $636 million Powerball drawing. The rest of us, back to the grind. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.